You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
Laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
British Olympic and Paralympic teams are fully vaccinated and ready to go for gold at the 2022 Beijing Winter Games. I'm John.
And I'm Michael, and this is Anything But Footy, the Olympic and Paralympic sport podcast. And we are Beijing bound again as we hear the medal target. Sorry, the medal range. That is the vernacular this time around that Team GB and Paralympics GB could possibly win over the coming weeks.
In this episode, we'll hear from the CEO of UK Sport on Beijing and badminton, the latest British sport to conduct an open and honest review into its elite performance programme following complaints.
I'll explain that medal range comment shortly. We'll also be revealing the latest British athlete to be picked for Team GB and hear all about the latest plans for the Beijing Paralympics, which is now just 50 days away. We'd love to hear from you as well. You can get in touch anytime at AnythingButF on Twitter. You can find us on Instagram, on Facebook. Send us a message there. We're online at anythingbutfooty.com. And you can drop me an email and drop John an email. We both pick them up. AnythingButFooty@gmail.com. So here we go then, another episode of Anything But Footy, and Great Britain could win up to seven medals. That's the medal range at the upcoming Beijing Winter Olympics, which would make it the most successful games ever, John.
Yeah, 3-7 is what UK Sport have been saying. I've been talking to Dr. Kate Baker, who's the new Director of Performance at UK Sport. You remember, UK Sport is the agency that oversees the government and national lottery funding, and they decide and oversee the national governing bodies and people like British Swimming and British Athletics and where that money goes. They obviously also give money to GB Snow Sport for the Winter Olympics and that kind of thing. So what Dr. Kate Baker was saying, and look, to be honest, Michael, we're a couple of weeks away from the games. We haven't got the full team yet, and they're pretty clear on that. They reckon more than 70 athletes will go across both the Olympics and the Paralympics. That's about 50-55 for Team GB. That's the Olympics, don't forget. And Paralympics GB, between 20-25 athletes. But they reckon we should have the widest number of sports ever. So more athletes in more sports. And also some former summer sports athletes is how Dr. Kate Baker described it. And as I say, we know that there are certain famous Olympic champions who are trying to get into the Team GB for the Winter Olympics at the moment. We haven't got all the teams confirmed as yet, but that was her kind of take on it. They're looking as well for gender balance moving forward, that they have as many females as males as they have done in the summer games. In fact, the females have taken over the men in some teams, and as I said, wider sports. So 3-7 for the Olympics, 5-9 for the Paralympics. And what Dr. Kate Baker said to us is that generally the teams are young, dynamic and motivated. And it feels like that, Michael, with who we've spoken to over the last few weeks with some of the team announcements.
Yeah, and I think that's been a pattern, if you like, with the way that sport is changing, and certainly Team GB and the British Olympic Association and the UK sport approach is changing. I'm not going to say, well, I am going to say, but I'm not going to mean it, if that makes sense, that we're chasing medals in sports that are easier to win. What we are doing is a more strategic and targeted approach in this country. And what that meant in Tokyo is we saw medals in skateboarding. We saw medals in BMX. We saw tremendous success in BMX. It was fantastic. It meant a great games for British cycling. But the more traditional events that we know and love and have seen terrific success in, like the velodrome events, the track cycling, the medal haul wasn't so great. So what we are seeing in UK sport at the moment is these governing bodies that are in receipt of these monies from the agency UK Sport and the additional funding that you might get from Sport England or Sport Scotland, whatever, the National Lottery. They are being used in cleverer and more niche ways. And that is why I think we're going to see some of these younger, so-called more exciting, more dynamic disciplines, things like freestyle snowcross and snowboard. They will be the events where we'll probably see British medals when we get round to the Winter Olympics, which start, of course, on the 4th of February, and the Winter Paralympics, which start on the 4th of March. Now, we've seen £27 million invested from the government, National Lottery, through UK Sport, into these world-class elite programs for the Olympic and the Paralympic winter sports. That's for the Beijing cycle. There is a further £5 million from the National Lottery that's gone in. So I think what we probably need to let people know is a lot of the narrative we're going to hear over the next couple of weeks. Let's say there's a British medal in bobsleigh. The headline for that is going to be they don't get funding. They don't get UK sport funding. What they do get is support. And that support is still financial. And there are, of course, all the other support methods that UK Sport have around the team as well. So I'm excited. I'm excited about Beijing. It is going to be very much an unknown. We'll repeat a lot of what we said ahead of Tokyo, which is these games will be about the nations and the teams that have perhaps coped with COVID best. We saw in Tokyo with the summer athletes. That means British athletes, I think, should do quite well.
And it's interesting, Andy Anson, who's the chief exec of Team GB, talked about the fact that they were keeping all their fingers crossed that there would be spectators in Beijing. There's a bit of uncertainty about it still at the moment, as you mentioned, with the game starting in less than a couple of weeks' time. But he described it as a total positive for the games if you can have spectators in there. We, of course, you spoke to a lot of people at Tokyo, and I think what the athletes really missed, and it's something that I didn't really think about too much in advance, was that their families had been there all the time and they're not going to be there. And of course, the family still won't be there this time, but there will be friendly faces. There will be support. And I think that would be, a different dynamic from Tokyo. They describe Tokyo as a one-off Olympics. Beijing is quite similar in terms of all the COVID protocols. And we'll talk more about that, I'm sure, as the podcast goes on. But it's great that, fingers crossed, there will be spectators, although the IOC have said this week they're not quite convinced that that will still happen.
Shortly, we will be revealing the name of the latest person on the team sheet, as it were, for Team GB. That is in the sport of luge, and we'll be hearing from, I'm going to give a clue here, him as well. But before that, more on this kind of funding and this medal range and the general conversation around athlete welfare. And we've been speaking to the chief executive of UK Sport, that is Sally Munday, and she's been telling us how they have been preparing alongside the British Olympic Association and the British Paralympic Association for the games which are coming up shortly.
Oh gosh, it's incredible to see two games within 6 months. I don't think probably any of us ever thought that we'd see this in our lifetimes. And I have to say, hats off to the British Olympic Association, the British Paralympic Association, but also the wider high performance sporting system, the institutes of sport. Just incredible being able to shift from, normally having that break point. But for everyone involved, I think it's been quite incredible. But also, I guess also really exciting.
And with the excitement, the cloud, if you like, the COVID cloud that kind of keeps coming and going, and the challenges that brings are second games during the pandemic.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we said to the sports about 18 months ago, so when we were about, I think, 2 months into the pandemic, we said to all of the sports, who knows what the next period is going to hold? And actually, the sports and the athletes that are going to be successful are the ones that are going to be the ones that can be most adaptable, most flexible. We are in an environment in high performance sport in this country that where one of our greatest advantages that we have is that we place such a high emphasis on planning and attention to detail. The problem is in a pandemic is that you're not doing sort of plan A, B and C. You're probably down to plan X, Y and Z. And so it's really about having to utilize the skills that we've got across our community to plan, replan, replan. But we also know that a lot of our staff and a lot of the athletes, they like the certainty of what's in front of them. And I think, again, what has been demonstrated over this last period is just the incredible adaptability and resilience of people that, no, they can't operate in their normal mode. They've got to think differently. They've got to be prepared for things to change. And for the winter sports, you know, to be in this place where we are now, where the 13th of January, and we're still not through all the qualification events is quite extraordinary. So again, huge applause to all of those that have adapted to be in a position where we're taking such an exciting team to Beijing.
And Sally, with that background and with conversations around mental health and well-being more open, more honest than ever before, are you supporting your athletes, and how are you supporting your athletes with all that uncertainty and the fact that we're at this stage and we still don't know the makeup of the team, for example?
Yeah, so I think athletes are very used to the experience of what it feels like to go through selection. And the closer you are to an event, obviously, you know, your focus is on selection. The experience that I had of running a sport for 10 years, one of the things that I always reflect on now is that actually the period of selection can be more stressful than the period of the games themselves. And I think for the winter sports, because there's so much unpredictability and jeopardy in the type of sports that a lot of those sports are, you know, you can go into something being in the best shape of your life, but, you know, you're on ice. You're on snow, you're on, you know, there's so many things that increase that jeopardy. What's important from our point of view with both what the sports do, what we do, the institutes of sports do, and the BOA and the BPA, our role is about providing and wrapping around the athletes the best possible environment and support to enable them to achieve their ambitions. A lot of that is around obviously the sport itself, but a lot of it is also about the mental and physical support that they need to be in the best shape of their lives. There's been huge support over the last period in preparing them. There'll be support on the ground in Beijing. There's helplines for athletes whilst they're in Beijing. And then there'll be a whole decompression process when they return. Like we saw in Tokyo, this is another games, kind of a bit like no other for these athletes. And our job is really focusing on the welfare of the athletes and the staff going, and making sure that everybody goes and is able to be the best that they can be and go there safely and come home safely.
And talking of ambition, if I can read from the release today, intelligence gathered by UK Sport suggests that British athletes have the potential to win between 3 to 7 medals at the Winter Olympics and 5 to 9 medals at the Winter Paralympics. Is that a target?
So we've taken a very deliberate approach to talk about ranges rather than targets. A pandemic really does change things in terms of how you think of things. We know that with the most recent variant of COVID, that it's increasing the risks of any of us not being able to actually get to the games if we contract COVID. And so what we've done is we've looked at, okay, let's take into account the fact that we very much hope and expect that we'll be able to get everybody there. But we also accept that not only with the pandemic, but also with the increased sort of unpredictability, as I said, of winter games, that anything can happen on the day. And so we don't see it as a target, but we do see it as a realistic range of where we might end up. Our stars of the snow and ice are ready to showcase what they can do, their skill, their character, they're daring, and we're pretty confident we will land somewhere in that range.
Sally, you mentioned there about the excitement when we spoke at the press conference earlier about the exciting sports of Tokyo, so the BMX, the skateboards, the wheelchair rugby. Sometimes with Winter Olympics and Paralympics, there's even more excitement to come and try to reach out and across and get the British public kind of behind them. That's a big task over the next few weeks for people to get behind these kind of different but exciting sports.
So look, one of the joys of the Olympic and Paralympic Games that we know is that the British public love them and they engage with them. And part of that is they get to see sports that they're not seeing week in, week out on the TV. And what we did see in Tokyo was the British public really engaging with sports they hadn't really seen before. And I'm expecting the same thing to happen. But we also know that some of the sports that have been in the Games for a while really capture the imagination of the British public. We go curling crazy during the Winter Games. I mean, all of us, I think, so many of us, but particularly us that are sports fans, we just get hooked on these things. But I think what's really exciting for the Winters is the new disciplines that have been introduced over the last few games. Some of the, you know, things like border cross and ski cross and the excitement of those sports. But also we're seeing new disciplines in some of the more traditional sports. So the mixed curling that's coming up, really exciting. I think that's going to capture the imagination of the British fans. And what we know is that we as Brits love to see Brits doing well on the international stage. And what we've got is a group of athletes with a huge amount of talent that I think are going to put a lot of smiles on our faces over the next couple of months.
I think as well, we're going to send the number of athletes across the widest number of sports, which is great to see, as you say, some of those exciting new ones. You oversee, obviously, the 27 million that was spent from the National Lottery and the government. That's what UK Sport do. Is it fair that some sports miss out a little bit more? We've spoken to a long track speed skater who has to create his own coffee business to try and fund him. Could some of the money be spread a little wider if we want even more sports to get British success?
So what you'll have seen from UK Sport over the last period is that we launched a longer term strategy last year. And what we're trying to do is create the greatest decade of extraordinary sporting moments. And as part of that, what we want to do is to try and be successful in a broader range of sports. So you'll have seen the investment decisions that we made for the summer sports last year. We are investing in more sports than we have ever done before. With regards to the winters, and one of the really good things about how agile our system and our investment system can be, is that we have been able over the last year to increase the number of winter sports that we can invest in. We created a thing called the Beijing Support Fund. So whilst at the beginning of the cycle, there may have been sports where that potential seemed very unlikely, if that potential has grown over the cycle, what that's allowed us to do is then invest in another 7 sports who aren't part of the world-class programme to give them some preparation for qualifying and getting to Beijing. So everything from biathlon, bobsleigh, speed skating is both short track and the speed skating. But all of those we've been able to make some investment in. And obviously what we'll be looking to do post the Winter Games is looking forward to Cortina Milan and the investments that we'll be making. But we're very clear that what we're trying to do is to sort of give opportunities to the most talented athletes who will enable us to be successful across a broader range of disciplines. And if qualification goes as we hope it might, we could well be taking a team to compete in the most disciplines that we've ever seen. I think the most we've ever had before is 8. And if everyone qualifies, we will be taking athletes to compete in 9 disciplines.
And just finally, Sally, I just wondered if we could get your reaction to the report that came out about Badminton England this week, saying that they must introduce some fundamental cultural, behavioural and procedural changes, turning our attention to summer sport. What's the reaction from UK Sport on what that report has discovered with Badminton England and with what it said about their treatment of some of their elite names like Chris Langridge and Marcus Ellis?
We're obviously pleased to see badminton respond to the walk the floor exercise that took place last year. And I guess probably where I want to start, not in responding to your question, is that we're really clear that anyone working or involved in the high performance community has got to be committed to just the highest standards of ethics and integrity. And anyone unwilling to be part of that and sign up to that commitment just isn't welcome. The reality is that we are a human-based business. We're a people business. And I think that we will always, being a people-based business, find that there are people that want to be part of our community who frankly won't adhere and uphold the standards of behaviour that we expect. I think that what's important about where badminton have got to is that they've recognised that there are things that need to be different. They've been through a really thorough process to identify those things. And I think what's really important is that the athletes and the performance staff and the leadership of the governing body come together to be really collaborative about how they as a community make sure that the environment is as good as it can be for the athletes and the staff that work in it. It's tough in high performance sport where you're trying to be the best in the world, but just because it's tough doesn't mean it can't be a positive experience for everyone involved. And we are very clear that every athlete that comes through programs that we invest in, that we want them to be able to finish their careers, finish their time in a program that we invest in and look back, and whether they've achieved their aspirations or not from a performance perspective, be able to look back and say, do you know what, on the whole, I had a really positive experience. And I think for the vast majority of the athletes, you know, over 1,000 athletes that we fund and support, I think that's the case. But that doesn't mean that we are not going to be really, really strong on rooting out behaviour that isn't appropriate.
So just a couple of things on that, Michael, before we move on. You asked Sally the question about badminton, and it's important because before Tokyo, as you rightly said, Marcus Ellis and Chris Langridge were not happy with the selection process, and then other things came out of what was going on in their elite performance team.
It's a really interesting one, badminton, I think, because they won that medal, of course, in 2016 in Rio. And then we were expecting that was going to be this little bit of a lift-off launch pad, having had a couple of editions of the Games where they probably come up short, London especially. Badminton, along with swimming, were two of the write-offs, if you like, as far as British Olympic performance was in London. Not good. They won that medal against the odds. No one really predicted it. I think they did have a medal target, maybe of one for Rio. But then the funding went away. And I remember we spoke to Adrian Christie, who's the chief executive at Badminton England at the time. He's not there now. He's with Table Tennis England as an interim chief executive there now. We spoke to him. He was the first ever guest on our Great British Bosses podcast. And he said that came as a complete shock when they lost the funding. They had to redefine the organisation in terms of where they were going to bring their money in, make it a more commercially minded organisation. Lots of organisations in elite sport in this country are going through that process at the moment. They don't want to be so aligned with UK sport. And I'm sure that we're going to hear more about that during 2022 with other organisations concerned with top level athletes. So they then lost that funding after Rio, went to Tokyo. It all seemed to be a bit of a mess in the build up. Didn't obviously repeat the success, but they are now a funded sport again. And there are, as I've mentioned, the chief executive has gone from Badminton England that was in charge for, I think, around about 15 years. There are new people in charge now, and obviously UK sport are taking a great deal of interest in this. And that is all around this medals and more strategy now. They know that they can't just be an organisation that are pumping money into sport at a winner takes all, a winner at all costs mentality. They know that they have to be looking after these athletes who, you know, in some cases are very complex individuals and you know, need that blanket around them. We're talking about winter sport on this podcast. We think about Elise Christie, speed skater, of course. And, you know, all of the conversations that Elise Christie has had around all her difficulties, you know, in the last cycle and the cycle before that, We need to support these athletes. Now, we know Elise Christie is not going to make these games for various reasons. Injuries and an illness have obviously impacted her build-up. But UK Sport now have to be talking to these bodies that they're funding and making sure that they are keeping them to the very, very highest standards. And that's what Sally Mundy, I think, was saying to us in that conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And UK Sport celebrating their 25th birthday this year.
I'm not singing. I'm not singing, John.
It came, of course, after the awful 1996 Atlanta Olympics and bringing in the way and changes that the athletes were funded and stuff. But I hear there is a location in London where you could have a good party. That might be available.
Cheese and wine. Cheese and wine for that one, maybe.
Bring your own, I think it might be as well. But in all seriousness, happy birthday to UK Sport. And fingers crossed, as we hear, heard from Sally, that those medal ranges are something that Team GB and Paralympics GB can match. And Pyeongchang, of course, Sochi as well, their most successful Winter Olympic and Paralympics in British history. This is Anything But Footy, the Olympic and Paralympic podcast. On to the latest Team GB announcement. And we can reveal the latest name. It was a slight hint from Michael that Rupert Staudinger is the latest name for Team GB heading off to the Olympics in the luge, Michael.
Yeah, and it's a terrific announcement as far as Rupert is concerned, heading off to his second games. I think he would certainly look back at his experience 4 years ago as an experience. And, you know, I think we'll probably hear when the interviews are done with Rupert closer to the time that, you know, I think it was very much a learning curve for him in Pyeongchang. He's back there this time. A serious medal hope? Probably not, in all honesty, as far as GB is concerned. But you never know when sport is on snow and ice. But it will also be tinged, I think, very much with sadness for Rupert. And I think, obviously, for the British Olympic team as well. Because we lost, around Christmas time, AJ Rosen, who was a British Olympic luger. He was very much the standout luger as far as sort of Team GB Great Britain is concerned. He fought a very brave battle with cancer. He'd represented GB in 2006, 2010 as well. Also qualified for 2018 with no funding. But as I said, we lost AJ Rosen. And Rupert has told us that he will be paying his own special tribute to AJ Rosen when he competes in the luge in Beijing.
Yeah, it's ever so sad. I still can't believe it, really. I mean, AJ has been more than a teammate, a great friend, and he's, yeah, I think without him, I would have not made it to the last Winter Olympics. He's been a tutor to me. He shared all his experiences and helped me so much. So yeah, his death is ever so tragic, and yeah, it's unbelievably sad.
He went to three Olympics, of course, the Winter Olympics, and is described as the best ever luge athlete for Great Britain.
Yes, I can absolutely underline that, stress that. AJ has been amazing. He's such a good slider. Even big nations or big nation lugers say that he's been an incredible luger, and I can just say the same. I always looked up to him and try to, yes, slide like him, and that's all I can say. He's been an amazing athlete, yeah.
And Rupert, there'll be no better, bigger tribute to AJ than you getting out there to Beijing and doing your very best, I presume.
Absolutely. I even have, like, on my helmet, I have a little memory, rest in peace AJ sign on it. And yeah, it's also gonna be for him. I know he's looking down on me and hoping for the best, and hopefully seeing me doing well.
Well said, Rupert, and all the best to all of the team. And there will be more announcements in the days and weeks to come. So stay with Anything But Footy. Make sure you follow us, whether you listen on Apple or Amazon or whatever, press the follow button and you will get all the latest information as we head into Beijing. Our first Winter Olympics is Anything But Footy.
Yeah.
Michael, which is I'm quite looking forward to it. I think it's so different. And what I didn't realise is it's just the same length. It's 3 weekends. It's 2.5 weeks of brilliant sport.
For everyone that enjoyed sitting up through the night watching the Tokyo Games, me especially, every night without fail, I was in front of my screen from 11 o'clock every night. But not just me. Millions of people across the country, all the people that download and listen to this podcast, they maybe didn't sit up every night and watch it quite so much as I did. But they will have got up, and I know people that stayed up or whatever to watch Sky Brown in skateboarding and watch Bombette Martin make history as the first ever Olympic skateboarder, to watch Kai White and Bethany Schriever in BMX, for example. There will be people doing that again. They will have that another chance to watch these new, these exciting, these dynamic sports. And there will be names that people do not know right now that in 2.5, 3 weeks, people will be going to their local snow centres, or they will be going to their local curling rinks, and they'll be pretending to be Katie Ormerod or Izzy Atkins or Charlotte Banks or Bruce Murr. Whoever that name is, there will be people doing that.
We all know that the brooms are coming out in the kitchens.
Yeah,
let's
exactly.
Let's be honest. There's going to be lots of sweeping going on. Now, talking of things that need to be done before these Olympics and Paralympics, and we mentioned this at the start of the programme, it's been announced that all Team GB and all Paralympics GB athletes and support staff have been fully vaccinated. Some of them have been boosted as well. And also what's been announced is that with COVID, of course, still sweeping the world, the latest variant, Omicron, seeing big numbers. You see what's going on in Australia at the moment with high numbers and a crowd capacity being reduced at the Australian Open and the whole row about Novak Djokovic coming in and out of the country. All of the teams for Great Britain, all the athletes have been vaccinated. And we're told that it wasn't mandated. There was a rule. The Chinese organisers said, if you're not vaccinated, you have to come into the country and quarantine for 21 days. But as you'll hear in a moment, it doesn't seem that was the reason why Team GB and Paralympics GB athletes have done it. They just all have looked and spoken to doctors and feel that that's the right thing to do. They've also announced, Michael, the most comprehensive tests than anywhere in the world. If you are going as a team support for Team GB and Paralympics GB or an athlete, you have to have 5 PCRs before you go and lateral flow tests and health monitoring as well. And that is more than what the Beijing organisers are asking for. And it's all about, and we talked about this before Tokyo, it's about getting the athletes on the start line. And people are isolating at the moment and removing themselves, as the advice has been very much from the IOC and Beijing organisers. But that is what people are doing. And the whole purpose of what Team GB and Paralympics GB are doing at the moment is to get the athletes to the games.
And absolutely. I mean, looking at the GB selection, Team GB selection, of course, we know that Great Britain have competed at every Winter Olympics since France, 1924, Chamonix, when you were just a lad. We've got a squad of, we think, around about 50 going this time around. Limited amounts of medals over the previous editions. 23 Winter Games, Britain have won just 32 medals in total, although 7 more were won in figure skating when it was part of the 1908 and 1920 Summer Olympics. But there is this upward curve from Sochi in 2014 and Pyeongchang in 2018. As you've said, a lot of these teams are still to be announced. We still need to find out whether they will get to the start line. We know who our figure skaters will be. We know who our curlers will be. We know that we've got 4 speed skaters going there, particularly looking forward to watching Cornelius Kersten in long track for the first time since 1992 in the 1,000 metres and the 1,500 metres. We've got the brothers Farrell and Noel Tracy and Kat Thomas as well, who, as we've mentioned, is going sort of as the sole female with Noah Elise Christie this time. Bobsleigh is going to be an interesting team selection, I think, and there's a lot of focus on this. The Bobsleigh World Cup, Great Britain's 4-man sled, have won a 3rd silver medal of the season. We've seen Greg Rutherford finally make his debut as a professional bobsleigh athlete as well. Whether he makes it to the games is still very much up in the air. So as far as Team GB are concerned, the athletes are being named at the moment. There'll be some more. As far as the Winter Paralympics are concerned. The BPA have named their curlers, and there will be some more names to come onto that list, of course. And we've been speaking to the man who is in charge of the team heading to the Paralympics. He is Chef de Mission of Paralympics GB. He's Phil Smith.
We'll definitely be our biggest team, we think, since 1998 back in Nagano. And depending on where we end up with those final qualification numbers, it could be our biggest team ever. So it's really exciting to be taking such a big team, but also a really competitive team as well.
And one of the issues is the qualifying that's still going on. I mean, you've got a whole team out in Lillehammer at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's not unusual at this stage for winter athletes to still be trying to compete, to qualify, or at least some of them. It's pretty standard practice. The season runs right through to before the games. Obviously, the fact that it's a World Championships this close, it was postponed from last year, does add an extra layer of challenge. But actually, it's an opportunity for our guys to go out and test themselves against the world and hopefully ruffle a few feathers before the Paralympic Games.
Now, we know that elite sport in this country has, in the past, been very driven by targets, and targets equal funding. UK Sport are suggesting today 5 to 9 medals at the Winter Paralympics, but they're saying that's not a target, Phil. So what is it if it's not a target?
I think it's a range that UK Sport believe that the team we're taking can achieve. And I think that's something that we're supportive of. We know, as I've said, that this is the most competitive team we've taken to a Games before. We've got medal opportunities from more athletes and more sports than ever before. We've had success in Sochi and in Pyeongchang, where we won 6 and 7 medals. But most of those medals came from a couple of athletes in one discipline in our visually impaired skiing team. And whilst we are obviously looking forward to seeing those guys go again, it's brilliant that we've got more alpine skiers, Nordic skiers, snowboarders, and our wheelchair curlers who are all consistently producing top 5 performances on the world stage, which puts us in a really good position to challenge for medals across the team.
And do you think it's important that even though we've had so many challenges, we still have so many challenges on the table with COVID, that there is still some benchmarking around elite sport, because people are still, you know, buying their lottery tickets, they're still funding a lot of these athletes to these games?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you ask the athletes what they're in it for, it's performance driven. They're going out to produce their best performances. Now, for different athletes, that will mean different things, but every athlete is going out to achieve their personal best at the Paralympic Games, whether that be a top 5 finish or a gold medal. So I think it is important that we have a way of measuring success. But this is a team that isn't going to be defined just by a number of medals at the end of the day. We'll be defined by the performances that we put in across the field of play.
Now, Michael mentioned the dreaded C word, obviously COVID, but you are taking a fully vaccinated team out to Beijing and staff as well.
Yeah, every member of our delegation will be fully vaccinated, which is obviously a great place to be, both individually and for all of our teammates as we go in. I think something that we are keen to ensure, just to make sure that no one has to go through the 21 days of quarantine on arrival in China, which the organising committee have said will need to be in place for anyone unvaccinated. But actually, we know it helps to secure the safety of our team, and it's a great place to be going into Beijing.
I mean, we've seen with Novak Djokovic in the last week or so that the uncertain rules don't really help. So actually, with the Chinese and often praise the IOC, but obviously always praise the IPC, but those rules about the 21 days unless you're vaccinated, that's actually helped. These are what it takes to go and compete at this world level.
Absolutely. And I think it's safe to say that for certainly the vast majority, if not all of our team, it hasn't needed that 21 day quarantine hanging over them as a reason to go out and get vaccinated. But we are really comfortable that we are going in to the games knowing that everyone is fully vaccinated and that we won't have anyone having to do that 21 days quarantine or anyone having hopefully any issues when they arrive in China.
poor old Phil, he went to Tokyo as the deputy. Now he's in charge as chef de mission. I don't think he slept probably in the last 6 months. He's not going to sleep much over the next few weeks. We wish him well for Paralympics GB. And some good news that came out, the IOC and also the Tokyo organisers from 2020, revealing that there was no data, no sequencing data from the, this is from the government of Japan, that there was no spread of the new coronavirus between participants of the postponed Olympic and Paralympic Games in Tokyo last year and the local population. So that the bubble that was created in Tokyo did its job effectively. And I've been told that when the guys go to Beijing, there's going to be improved isolation. It's something that the British Olympic Association and others have talked to the IOC about and said, you can't just, if someone's tested positive or test and trace, you can't just throw them into a darkened room somewhere. You've got to still look after them. It's not right that may have happened elsewhere. So there will be hotels for isolation if you do test positive, rather than just hospitals, which I think there was in Tokyo. And the village, the athletes' village, will be the place where you will isolate for test and trace, and you can carry on doing your training and your exercise before, because obviously you will be hoping that you will still be competing. So I think that's an important step that has been taken, and everybody's learning lessons between these two games. No one knows what COVID was going to do with Tokyo. They obviously did the best job that they could. The city was worried about the number of people coming in. It looks like it did do what they said was going to happen. And now it's down for Beijing and this whole control loop that they've set up, this huge bubble right around the Olympics and the Paralympics, to make sure and protect the athletes and everyone involved.
Yeah, I think firstly, credit to Tokyo for getting the Olympics and the Paralympics away, if you like, when there were so many barriers in their way. But there will, of course, as there is with everything, learnings from Tokyo. So we always remember those headlines, wasn't it? Six British athletes forced to self-isolate after contacts on the journey out, the plane out. I think certainly subsequently some athletes have admitted that upset their preparations, for example. So, you know, this is being looked at, has been looked at with Beijing, and there will hopefully then be a better process in place. But that fear that the Olympics, the Paralympics, was going to be a super spreading event, that we were going to see roaring record numbers, doesn't appear to have come to fruition. You know, and that is obviously something that took place in the height of the summer in Tokyo. But I think by and large, the measures that were put in place, the protocols that were put in place, the fact that it was behind closed doors worked. And take that as your blueprint. Sorry, playbook in the IOC language, add some more detail to it, some of those learnings that we're now able to add because we know what happened in Japan, and we will hope that we'll get a similar outcome from these Winter Games of the Olympics and Paralympics.
Yeah, a press conference that I attended earlier, they were asked, the Team GB and Paralympics GB, we heard from Phil Smith, Georgie Harland, the first female chef de mission for Team GB, could they guarantee that all athletes would get to the start line? Of course, they can't guarantee that, but they can put, as you say, everything in place to try and make that happen. And we wish them the best of luck. Beijing 2022 starts on February 4th. Stay with us. Follow Anything But Footy, because we will have all those other team announcements for you over the days to come. Because as Michael suggested, there's some big decisions with some surprise names in or out, I would assume, over the course of the next week. So make sure you stay with Anything But Footy.
Let's run through some of the other Olympic and Paralympic sport headlines, including one that I'm seriously excited about, John. I see this July date in 2022. I see you and I sat by the River Seine together. Maybe some Borsan on the go. Maybe a bottle of something nice. Chilled, maybe. Yeah, we'll bring our own. A nice cheese and wine party on the banks of the River Seine. And with everyone's permission to do it, watching the opening ceremony of the Olympic Games in Paris. But more on that in a moment. The fallout from the 2021, delayed 2020 Olympics is happening currently and has been happening over the past few weeks. And we'll start with rowing, who had a very disappointing games at the Olympics in Tokyo. Paralympics was a better performance. So the GB rowing team have acted by appointing Paul Stannard as its new men's Olympic head coach, following what they described as a two-stage interview process. He's taken on the role with immediate effect. He's worked with British rowing for over 18 years, and since 2013 has led the men's sculling team to both the Rio 2016 and delayed Tokyo Olympics. So a brand new role, a brand new man in charge, Paul Stannard now in charge of Olympic rowing.
And to quote the Beatles, a few more hellos and goodbyes, and particularly Danny Kerry, the most successful coach in the history of hockey in Great Britain. After 17 years, he has announced he is stepping down from his role as head coach of the men's programme. He took them to Tokyo 2020 in 2021, but he will, of course, be well remembered for the success as he led the women's team along with some brilliant players like Helen Richardson-Walsh and Kate Richardson-Walsh and Alex Danson and so many of those brilliant hockey players for that gold at Rio 2016 and also the bronze in London 4 years earlier. Well done to Danny Kerry.
Yep, and also another Danny Talbot, John, is retiring from athletics as well. What do you mainly remember? What's your Danny Talbot memory?
Just that he won a gold medal at London 2017. It was in the 4x1. And that amazing night, standing in the depths of the London Stadium, because we weren't allowed to actually watch the actual races, and the finish line was in touching distance, and we could hear the roar. And I just remember the roar. I always thought that at the Olympics, the London Stadium was the best place to watch sport. I think the atmosphere that you get in that stadium, even when West Ham are beating Norwich in it, is an impressive, sorry to mention football, is an impressive noise. And I remember Danny Talbot and, of course, Adam Jamili and the rest of the 4x1 crew winning that gold medal.
A friend of mine wasn't that impressed, I think, when they went to see Guns N' Roses there. apparently they couldn't get served for beer. But that's an aside, but it's not football anyway, which is what you've brought up there. So, yeah, best wishes to Danny Talbot, his retirement from competitive athletics. And talking of, as you said, hellos and goodbyes, we say goodbye to a friend of ours, Ian Dyer, who was the lead track coach for the Great Britain cycling team. He is leaving British cycling after 21 years working to support riders at British cycling to achieve their best. He joined British cycling in 2000, of course, and I remember we spoke to Ed Clancy a while back.
And I was going to say, who are you going to have a cup of tea with before the next Olympics?
Yeah, well, I was going to say 2000 was a great time to join British cycling because you had Jason Queeley, and then we were chatting to Ed Clancy a while back, weren't we? And he was saying that, you know, just to have been around British cycling in that 20-year period where Jason Queeley's medal led to, you know, what happened subsequently, and then obviously the Chris Hoy, Victoria Pendleton success, and then obviously we've seen the Jason Kenny, Laura Kenny success, both getting honours in the New Year's list, of course, Dame Laura and Sir Jason now. But yeah, Ian Dyer is the man that I went to see. I've said this before, told this story before, but very briefly. Went to see, had a cup of tea with him in Rio on the eve of the track cycling programme. And he sat me down and he went through the list of all the track cyclists and said, Michael, they're all going to win a medal. And I thought, well, that's a bold prediction. And I remember saying that to Stephen Park, that Ian Dyer had said that. And there was a sharp intake of breath, and Stephen was saying that, but that's maybe slightly above Ian's pay grade to make those kind of suggestions to you, Michael. But he was right. He was absolutely right. They all did win a medal. And, you know, 21 years at British Cycling, all the success that we've seen with the track, we wish Ian Dyer, lead coach for the Great Britain cycling team, all the very best.
Yeah, we will certainly miss him, and Michael certainly will with his tips.
I will.
Because it went down very well at TalkSport when you revealed that.
And, it did.
And everyone was like, wow, Michael is a genius, as we all know he is. And talking of sitting down before the Olympics with a nice cup of tea or a bottle of something else, as Michael has hinted
it's at. It's got to be a good coffee or a glass of red or white.
It's got to be a glass of red in Paris for the spectacular opening ceremony plans for the River Seine. Remember David Beckham in a speedboat under Tower Bridge and then all the way up the River Lee to the Olympic Stadium for London 2012. Well, Paris, as of course they will try to, are going to outdo London, it seems, because what they have said, instead of the traditional stadium setting, Paris 2024 will be set against, the opening ceremony will be set against the backdrop of one of the most iconic cities on the river. More than 160 boats will carry delegations along a 6-kilometre route past monuments as famous as the Notre Dame Cathedral, the Louvre and the Eiffel Tower. It sounds spectacular.
It does sound spectacular. I am mindful of, and we are in Platinum Jubilee year, the Queen's Diamond Jubilee Thames River pageant. That was a bit of a washout, in all honesty.
Didn't it rain?
It rained constantly, I think. And I can remember trying to follow the TV coverage. Well, it will be nearly 10 years ago now. And thinking that looks like a sad event. But let's hope, from everything that we've heard about this, that this will be, you know, something absolutely spectacular. Again, another fantastic innovation for the Olympics. You know, we've seen these spectacular stadium-based opening ceremonies. Beijing in 2008 was probably a high point. We know what Danny Boyle did in London. It was different. It was humorous. It was fantastic. It really resonated with the British viewers at home and in the stadium. Rio had to bring it back. Tokyo couldn't do what they wanted to do. Paris are doing something different. And, you know, I, for one, really looking forward to it.
Eiffel, for one. Very good. As ever, you can get in touch anytime at anythingbutf on Twitter, or you can message us on Insta and Facebook. Our website is anythingbutfooty.com, or you can email us at any time. We're on it 24 hours a day, frankly, at anythingbutfooty@gmail.com. It has been a pleasure, as always, Michael, to talk Olympics with you. I hope you've enjoyed our Olympic chat, and we will have more to come. And as I've said, follow Anything But Footy for the latest, because we are Beijing bound over the next couple of weeks.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.